Committee to order. I know we have minutes in here somewhere. Right here. President Dabney, would you move the minutes?
I'd be more than thrilled to do so, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Favorite part of the day.
Rarely ever contested. Are there any additions or revisions to the minutes? Subtractions? Seeing none, all those in favor of passing the minutes for March 28th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And we have minutes. We also have a new committee member. Will you look at that? Good to have you back. You took almost a year off. Would you like to introduce yourself?
I would, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And it's great to be back working with you on jobs. I spent the first 4 years down here working on this with you, and I'm glad to be back, and thank you. If you don't know who I am, David Baker, I'm a small business operator, owner of a hospitality company back in Wilmer. We run a restaurant and a hotel. I have about 40 employees and just ready to get to work. So thank you very much for that ability to announce myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, the only difference took a lot of the grief out. We don't have broadband anymore.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
Yeah, I know. I know. You enjoyed that so much. It's fun watching you and the chairman. Our first bill on the agenda today, we're going to do two things today. We're going to do the Duluth Paper Mill Minnesota Investment Fund loan, and then we're going to do the walkthrough on the jobs omnibus bill. I will tell everyone that House File 1533 is already in the omnibus bill, so why don't we call Representative Olson to the testifiers table and hold our breath to see if she can get this bill passed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. So thank you for taking the time to hear House File 1533 that requests state support from the Minnesota Investment Fund to preserve 200 well-paying jobs in Duluth. Verso Paper is responding to a changing global market.
Along, Representative, I will move your House File 1533 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Verso Paper is responding to a changing global market and adding production of the new products to their manufacturing process in order to survive and keep their jobs here in Minnesota. The company is looking to make an investment of $25 million in order to establish a new line of production. They are requesting that the state partner with them to help keep these jobs here, and they have made a commitment to both the investment level of $25 million and to the 200 jobs here in the state. I have with me a witness from Verso who can tell you about how they are responding to the marketplace and their strong desire to maintain their operations in Minnesota. And with that, I will turn it over to the testifier.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Guy Priley, and I am the Communications and Public Affairs Specialist at the Verso Duluth Paper Mill. I'd like to start out by thanking you for the opportunity to speak today. I am here regarding the request for $2 million in a Minnesota Investment Fund grant from DEED that would be used to convert equipment at our mill and allow us to expand our product portfolio into the growing packaging sector. The Duluth Mill began operations in 1987 and is a world-class producer of super calendar-grade paper. It's the type of paper that's used in newspaper advertising inserts, catalogs, and magazines. The Verso Duluth Mill is a quality and customer service leader within the paper industry. We have 225 highly talented and dedicated employees, and they are our most valuable asset. We invite everyone on the committee to come to Duluth for a tour of our facility and meet the great people who work there. In order to be a world-class organization, our first commitment is to becoming a zero-injury facility. We accomplished this in 2018 by going the entire year and 490 days overall without a recordable injury. In addition, it has been 2 years and counting since our last lost work time injury. We are also very proud of the fact that, based on production performance metrics, we are the most productive super-calendared manufacturing facility in the world. Our mill has a significant economic impact on the economy of Northeast Minnesota, with over $100 million in annual contributions. We provide excellent paying jobs with total annual wages and benefits around $25 million a year. A male employee's wages average about $63,000 per year. We also contribute $40 million in energy purchases, $7.3 million in environmental protection programs, and $710,000 in property taxes. We are the City of Duluth's largest customer for electricity, water, and wastewater treatment. Since manufacturing jobs support 3 to 4 other jobs within the community, our facility directly and indirectly supports employment for nearly 1,000 people in northeast Minnesota and northwest Wisconsin. Unfortunately, electronic communications have fundamentally changed the way people obtain information and purchase products. And as a result, the demand for super calendar grade papers has been steadily declining for the last 10 years. These market trends demand that the Duluth Mill diversify its product mix by manufacturing new products in stable and growing markets alongside its current super calendared products. Our new product portfolio would include products in the growing packaging sector. The new products would not only be 100% recyclable, but they would also be manufactured from recycled materials. This would also reduce our energy footprint, making us more environmentally sustainable. As part of its overall business strategy, Verso is evaluating the repositioning of some of its mill assets to address changes in customer demands for its products. The project under consideration at the Duluth Mill would cost in excess of $25 million and give the facility the flexibility to produce recycled packaging products in addition to the super calendar grade papers it makes today. The project would include modifying our existing recycle mill to process recycled, corrugated containers into pulp. We would also make modifications in the paper mill to allow us to manufacture a variety of packaging products in addition to the super calendar grade products we make now. To date, we have run a number of successful trials demonstrating our paper machine has the capability to make packaging products. We also have successfully run these products at multiple customer locations. We are one of 7 mills within Verso and compete for a limited pool of capital. Approval of this MIF funding request would significantly improve our chances of getting approval of this strategic capital investment at the Duluth Mill. State support can make the difference in how capital projects at Verso are selected for approval. The recent conversion of a paper machine at our Androscoggin Mill in Maine is a prime example. A $4 million grant from the state of Maine was a significant factor in the approval of that project. In conclusion, we believe a strategic investment the Verso Duluth Mill will put us on the path to a successful future. As we compete with other mills in the Verso manufacturing system for project capital, we're asking you to support funding of the MIF grant to help us make our case for approval. Thank you.
Thank you. I think there's one other that wanted to testify.
Mr. Chair, one other brief testimony.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape. Proceed.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney and members of the committee. My name is Andy Snope. I'm with the IBW Minnesota State Council. And this is just another example of how closely energy and industry are closely tied together. Verso Paper purchases steam and electricity from Minnesota Power's Hibbard Renewable Energy Center in Duluth. The Hibbard Energy Center employs 22 IBW Local 31 members who live in the Duluth area. Also, IBW electricians who are members of IBW 242 in Duluth work for contractors who provide electrical maintenance and upgrades at the plant. This investment into the innovation for the continued operation of this plant will not only secure jobs for workers who work at the plant, but will also help with the community of industry that support the paper mill. Please support House File 1533. Thank you, Chair Mahoney.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions for the author, Representative Robbins?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative. I'm still learning about all these different programs, so I just have a more general question. For the Minnesota Investment Fund, is it usual for loans to be forgiven, or are they usually revolving loans? And what portion of this loan will be forgiven, and what is the interest rate?
Mr. Chair, no, and I could look to nonpartisan staff to explain the MIF funds. I'm definitely not an expert in MIF funds.
We could ask Mr. Gunter, but I'll take care of this one. The MIF funds are typically $1 million. We are making an exception on this particular bill. We do it fairly regularly, maybe not every session, but every couple of sessions, we will find an organization that needs more than that $1 million. And yes, they are typically forgiven. The way they work is that that grant will be made to the city of Duluth, and they will give it to the paper mill. The paper mill will either for it, if it is totally forgiven, they won't make the payment. If it's not entirely forgiven, that loan is paid back to Duluth. Whatever portion is not forgiven is paid back to the city of Duluth. And, yeah, it's pretty standard operating procedure. Many small towns around the state have small dollars. Some have larger dollars in their MIF repayment fund, however they mark it in their city budget. But many cities have that. We had 39 of them use some of that funds for a different reason. Typically, those funds are used for, are supposed to be used for economic development, but I think it's 30 or 39 this year have taken part in a program that allows for, if you pay back the state or give the state 20% of whatever you have on hand, you can use it elsewhere. So, yes, that is typically the way we handle these particular type of economic development loans. Yep. Any other questions? Representative Sundin.
Thank you. And to Mr. Priley, you mentioned the recycling facility next door there. What's the amount of recycled product or pulp that goes in versus new pulp coming in from the forest?
I will have Gary Wardrigan, our pulp manager, answer that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Yes. My name is Gary Wardrigan. I'm a 32-year employee of the Duluth Paper Mill. The question, I believe, was what percentage of recycled products would go into. With this upgrade, our intent is that 100% of the product that gets produced would be made from recycled materials. So we're talking recycling corrugated cardboard type materials, and kind of our niche is to convert that into bags, so grocery bags, shopping bags, those types of materials.
Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that leads into my question. You'll still be taking raw fiber for your other product lines, then, is that correct?
Absolutely. We'll be swinging the mill between the two product lines, so we'll be using significant amounts of forest products that we do for the current grades that we make at the mill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I think this bill and this project is vital to keeping forest products industry going in northern Minnesota. So thank you, Representative.
All right. An important industry up there. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sort of following up on Representative Eklund, I used to live up in International Falls for 12 years and got to really see the paper industry at its best as well, and I have friends that work at your plant that I've think since retired. And it's a great operation. Is this kind of the first time your business has taken a pretty hard transitional period of kind of taking it from magazine and calendar stuff to the new packaging, and if it's boxes or whatever that is, I heard bags. Is this kind of the first time your company has had to do this?
At the Duluth facility, that would be correct. We've strictly been a one-grade mill since the startup in 1987.
Okay. And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is to the chair or to somebody, I support this. I think usually what I see is we support this type of a thing when it's expanding jobs, not just retaining. This is a good, large company. And we're just sort of maintaining status instead of actually having some growth. Is this an unusual move to more sustaining than it is to actually a large growth or a large addition to new jobs? Just sort of a question to the chair or somebody.
Representative Baker, MIF and Job Creation Fund is much more geared towards creating that larger group of jobs. Both of them... are used to retain businesses, and that is part of this. So oft times when you're retaining businesses, you get a few extra jobs, but not a not a huge number. But, no, we've done that. We do that all the time here in the state. Typically, they're much smaller loans. They're that $100,000 to $500,000 forgivable loans. But, yeah, we do it all the time.
Thank
Representative
you.
Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make a comment. I'm very happy that this mill is not going to go to Michigan or Wisconsin to make this material. I think this is a good sign that Minnesota industry is very flexible, and to maintain jobs is a very good thing. And I won't be able to quite say that this is a jobless jobs bill. So I'm very glad this bill is here.
Representative Sundin.
Nice trade. Just to add to the conversation, Mr. Chairman, this mill is serves other purposes in the community. The testifiers mentioned that there's a $40 million electric bill that they pay annually, so that's a it's a big deal for the Minnesota Power up there, keep those their plants running. And they are also a wastewater customer there. And if this mill were to close for some reason, the cost of operations at the WLSSD would be shared with other customers, ratepayers. So this is a good thing to keep the economy rolling right where it is.
Seeing no other questions, I'll renew my motion for House File 1533 to be held over for possible inclusion. Although, I don't need to have a vote on that one. So thank you for your time. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
Next bill on the calendar is, you know, we actually should have just gone for more questions because the less time I have to explain. I am going to bring my cell phone with because I'm trying to get a dentist appointment for this afternoon, and they're going to confirm.
Committee will be in recess until the chair gets his dental appointment.
No, I don't want to come back and have to talk.
This is kind of not that, folks.
Good morning, members. I would like to move House File 2208, the Jobs Omnibus Bill, to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. Please proceed with the testimony today.
Well, we'll get the bill in order, and then what my hope would be is to get nonpartisan staff to run through the bill, the policy and the fiscal stuff. And, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A-19 amendment.
Chair Mahoney moves A-19-0341 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. Amendment has been adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the product of our year-long, or six, what is it, 3 months? Seems like a year. And I want, to, before I even get started, I know how hard the staff has worked, the nonpartisan staff, to get this ready. We had our bill moved up by a couple weeks, so we have put together this bill very quickly and with as much fine-tooth combing as we could. Yesterday afternoon, I found a number of things that will have to come in the author's amendment on Thursday. But I will give you the little layout here. We're going to go through the bill today. We'll have public testimony tomorrow. If it goes past 9:30, we will return tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. We have caucus tomorrow afternoon, so we will be done with public testimony by 3:30, 4 o'clock. And then Thursday is markup, so I am going to ask that if you have an amendment for the bill, you get together with staff to write it up and get it to the committee administrator by noon on Wednesday rather than 8 o'clock in the morning. So we're going to have a what is it, a 21-hour rule. So with that, if I could ask the fiscal staff to go through the spreadsheet.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. So I will be going through essentially Article 1, which is just all the appropriations. So if you could turn to your spreadsheets now. At the top, I have 11 different agencies listed. This is significantly more than in the past. I've added Human Services, MMB, the Revenue Department, the Supreme Court, and the Attorney General to fit in funding for paid family leave and earned sick and safe time. DEED, or the Employment and Economic Development Department, is the largest appropriation we have. This year we do not have broadband in there. That is in Greater Minnesota, that committee. We also have the Destination Medical Center. This is statutory, and therefore we do not appropriate the money. It is a form of matching funds determined by statute. Then we have Labor and Industry, Mediation Services Bureau, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, which has no general fund appropriations, but we will look at that later when we get to the Workers' Compensation Fund. And then the Commerce Department, however, without energy resources, as that section is now in Energy and Climate Committee. Next, you'll see revenue listed. This revenue is dependent on funding for the programs it mentions. So the unclaimed property revenue would only be attained if you pass the unclaimed property provisions that Commerce has suggested. Likewise, if wage theft is not adopted, then we would not see the revenue from that either. Going to DEED, I've broken it out by division and appropriation. I will let you ask questions about each individual appropriation for the sake of time. Some changes to the spreadsheet from years past include community funding. You'll see a number of different funding areas where the actual organizations impacted are indented. If they are indented and have no appropriations in the House columns, then it's the number at the top. So, for example, if you look at line 31, business and community funding, that is a total of $9,350,000, and the Greater Minnesota Business Development Project, SPARC, Community Prosperity Grants, and the U of M Design Center are all eligible for that funding. The Minnesota Initiative Collaborative is one of the governor's items that we have also added to our spreadsheet. Child care funding is the next large difference. This is on line 52 on page 2. Here you can see that Women Venture, the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, and the Child Care Economic Development Grants are all eligible for this funding. Continuing down the spreadsheet, you can see that 1533 is already in there underneath MIF, and that is on line 63. It is a cutout or a carve out of the total $5.5 million for 2020. Moving on to workforce development, we've added a variety of organizations that did not receive funding in the past and maintained some that did. On to page 3. At the top, you can see opportunity funding. This is one of two much larger funding programs. As you can see, lines 81 through 93, those organizations are all eligible for this amount of funding, which is $23.009 million. Similarly, youth funding, all of those organizations are eligible for the total $1.5 million over the biennium. That may look rather small, but more of the youth funding will be in workforce development funds. At the moment, we are just going through general funds. Then general support services, Minnesota Trade Office, those stayed relatively the same. Vocational rehabilitation services, we increased the state's rehabilitation services by $8 million over the biennium. On to page 4. We also increased the funding for Centers for Independent Living. State services for the blind is relatively the same. And then we come to one of our largest changes, the paid family and medical leave section. Originally, the governor set a placeholder of $68 million. You can see that in the farthest right column of the governor's recommendations. After receiving a fiscal note, however, we determined that deeds cost would only amount to $32.524 million. I will continue talking about paid family leave later when I get to other agencies. And finally, dairy assistance or dairy assistance investment relief initiative is for the farmers who have been displaced due to terrible weather events. So that is just a set $10 million in the first year.
What line item was that?
131.
131, okay.
Yes.
Cool. There you go. Thank you.
Moving on to labor and industry, we decided to go with the governor's recommendation that they modernize their IT systems. Apparently, they are in need of that. Sorry, you can talk with Dolly itself about that. And then I'd just like to draw your attention to lines 138, 139, and 140. These are wage theft, earned sick and safe time, and paid family leave, respectively. So all of those costs are new. There was already $1 million over the biennium for wage theft. This, however, increases that amount. Next is the Mediation Services Bureau. That had an operating increase, remained basically the same. And then we're on to the Commerce Department, sans the energy resources. We funded some of the same things we've funded in the past, added a few organizations. And we approved the operating increase. Let's see. Telecommunications stayed relatively the same. Enforcement, we added on line 169, senior fraud prevention. This was in the governor's initial recommendations, but he removed it after revising them. We decided to put that back in. And then insurance stayed roughly the same. And now you can see we have a variety of agencies with very few funding items. So all of them, well, human services, that's the paid family leave amount, management and budget, we've got paid family leave and earned sick and safe time. For revenue, paid family leave, the Supreme Court, paid family leave, and for the Attorney General, there was some additional staff needed, so for wage theft prevention. On page 6, we move to the Workforce Development Fund, which is the other quite large fund we draw from in this committee. Following Representative Stevenson's bill, we have added the Metropolitan Job Training Grants. Then in Adult Services, we have a variety of organizations we have funded before. And you'll notice, again, the large opportunity funding and pool. And as you can see, that is broken up into roughly $11.5 million each year. Then I just have some of the governor's options listed so that you can see what the governor has recommended. They're similar organizations, but we have funded them differently here. Then we have the youth programs, which I mentioned before. As you can see, they receive roughly $16.8 million over the biennium. So that is where the bulk of their funding is rather than the general fund. Moving on to page 7. Those funding items have stayed relatively the same, the remaining ones indeed. Moving on to Dolly, we have added helmets to hard hats, and I think that's the only major change. And on to the last page, almost there. These are all other funds that we can appropriate from. So the remediation fund is for contaminated cleanup. The workers' compensation fund, there's quite a bit of money that goes to workers' compensation from that fund. Commerce also gets money from there for workers' comp fraud prevention and rate regulation. The Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, of course, gets its operating budget from the Workers' Compensation Fund. And finally, Commerce also has the Telecommunication Access Minnesota Fund. And this, as you can see, has a variety of uses, some for captioning meetings that happen in this building, and some for the deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing. I'd be happy to yield for questions.
Any questions from members? And it's a lot of information to digest in a few minutes. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And staff, good job going through that. Could you talk about line 19 a little bit? And you'd mentioned the Commerce Department or Committee's recommendations. I'm not as familiar with that. If you could explain that a little bit more.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative. So this line shows considerable revenue. The Commerce Department has indicated that their current unclaimed property system is not nearly as efficient as it could be. Part of the updates to this include modernizing the IT system they have for unclaimed property, and then also streamlining the process, which I believe just involves staff time to rework how that system works. They estimate that if all of this is, if all of their requests for updating the system are funded, they will be able to draw in roughly $14 million per year starting in 2021 in revenue.
Can you explain the amount of unclaimed money that the Commerce Department is holding right now, and how much will, do you have any idea?
Mr. Chair, I would have to get back to you on that. I don't know if anyone from Commerce is here and would be able to explain that better than I could.
I think there's somebody from Commerce.
Please state your name and proceed and welcome.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Kelly. I'm the legislative liaison for the Commerce Department. Currently, the state has roughly around $780 million in unclaimed property that it's holding and trying to return to its rightful owners.
And the quick question is, if we don't find the rightful owners, how much of that comes back to the state revenue?
Mr. Chair, committee members, if we don't find the rightful owners, all of that comes back to the state, and this particular bill and this particular dollar figure, as fiscal staff has indicated, is, I think it's a little under $400,000 for staff and computer. I don't know the exact dollar to return dollar ratio, but is it 14 or?
Yeah.
There's over $14 per dollar spent, and you know, they spend, I don't want to get into policy when we're talking finance, but they do spend a considerable amount of time trying to find the rightful owner before they take it into the state dollars, state coffers.
And Mr. Chair, members, for context, the current unclaimed property operating system is called UPS 2000, like Windows 2000. It is off to college this year. It's that old. And there are concerns. We are trying to modernize it, one, to make the return and compliance of property coming into the state more efficient, but also to safeguard the private data of Minnesotans and protect it from cybersecurity risk.
Thank you so much. I have Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a couple questions that I'm sure you know off the top of your head, and I'm just not maybe understanding the spreadsheet. The first is on the youth programs, lines 94, and then later referenced in towards the end, 229. So could you explain just why $1.5 million you said was general fund, but the larger amount was not general fund? So what is it if it's not general fund?
Good question, Representative Robbins. So the question is general fund versus workforce development fund. Please proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. Yes, so if it's not general fund, it's workforce development fund for this youth funding. And you're asking, what is the workforce development fund?
Where does that money come from?
So the workforce development fund comes from, let me just remember here. Can you?
I can take this particular one.
Okay. It has just
sorry, a newbie
completely
question.
Slipped
sorry.
My mind. I am so sorry.
Workforce development funds, for every employee that is paid $32,000, they pay a percentage. The employer pays a percentage to the state. Right now it's set at 0.1, and it equals out to roughly $27 per $32,000. And that's where that fund I think it's, and I'll ask fiscal staff, is it approximately $60 million per year?
Mr. Chair, representatives, at the moment, it's at roughly $61 a year, or $61 million for 2020. However, in the past, it has been closer to $80 million. However, there was no rollover from the previous fiscal year. Or there was just $1 million in rollover, as compared to $15 to $20 million.
Thank you very much. And one follow-up?
Representative Robbins.
Okay, thank you. And secondly, if you could just help me understand near 136 to 140, and then where this also appears later in the bill, it appears that for the earned sick and safe time and the family leave portion, that there's no estimates for the tails, and that's also true wherever I saw it later in the bill, sorry. But in both cases, the tails weren't accounted for, and could you just explain why that is?
To the fiscal staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative.
Do you see there?
Representative Robbins.
139 and 140.
Yes.
It doesn't show the forecast or the March amount. And then in another section, which is escaping me at the moment.
Oh.
175 and following. It also doesn't show anything for the forecast or the March amounts.
Okay. So on page 4, line 139, earned sick and safe time, I believe that there are tails listed.
Right, I guess I used the wrong word. It goes out to 2023, but then in the forecast numbers for 2019 and the March, the governor's revised, there's nothing in there. Could you just explain why that is?
Certainly. This is a new policy, and it is based off of a House file. So the governor's budget did not include it, and the February forecast does not include any new proposed legislation.
So the governor's budget didn't have the family leave in it?
The governor's budget did not have earned sick and safe time. And regarding paid family leave, the governor's budget simply put a $68 million placeholder.
Got it.
Indeed. So they didn't break it out by.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Makes sense now. Thank you.
Representative Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question to the author. And again, as I said on the committee a couple years ago, you were very working hard on wage theft stuff, and I see it's in the bill here today. On line 138, House File 6, is that basically, Mr. Chair, to put more agents in the field? Was that kind of the idea of this? Can you just give me a really quick update on your wage theft if it's changed a lot since the past?
Chair Mahoney.
After spending 35 hours in rooms with lawyers, anything will change.
Sure.
What the wage theft, that particular dollar figure, it does change. It, without looking at the fiscal note, I think it's 13 new FTEs. Two will be administrative. Several are field officers, and can't remember what the third piece is to it. But, yes, it increases by 13.5 FTEs. And elsewhere in the bill, earlier on, there's a allotment to the Attorney General for 5.5 or 6 FTEs for the legal work that might have to be done. Because the Attorney General will be representing the state.
Got it. Thank you.
Go ahead, fiscal staff on this. House Research.
Chair and members, Anna Schilling, House Research. We're now going to walk through the policy provisions in the bill. Starting with Article 2 on page 30, line 14. All of Article 2 is for House File 5, paid family and medical leave. House Article 3, which starts on page 68 at 3. All of the articles in Article, or all the sections in Article 3 are also for House File 5, paid family and medical leave. Turn to Article 4, which begins on page 70, line 21. That first section, Section 1 in Article 4, is the Getting to Work Program Codification, which is from House File 905. You turn to page 72, line 28, that's Section 2. This increases the Minnesota Investment Fund maximum grant and the required wage levels. This reflects House File 1507 and House File 2235. You flip the page, page 73, starting on line 17, section 3. This is the increase to the Job Creation Fund wage levels, which reflects House File 2235. Flip the page again, section 4, which begins on page 75, line 9. This is additional language recommended by DEED to conform with the JCF wage level increase that we did in House File 2235. Further down the page, page 75, line 25, section 5, this is the codification of the Pathways to Prosperity grant program, which previously was uncodified, with some additional language changes. This is House File 2043. Page 76, starting on line 19, section 6, this requires the DEED to do a inventory of workforce development programs, as reflected in House File 2622. On page 77, starting on line 6, section 7, this creates the Metropolitan Job Training Grants Program, a version of the existing Job Training Grants Program that works in Greater Minnesota that would also give money, this program would give money to similar programs in the metropolitan area. This is House File 1507. Turning to page 80, line 3, sections 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 are all for the notice of call center and customer service relocations, House File 1241, so there's a number of pages of that. You turn to page 82, starting on line 19, section 14. This is a very lengthy section that does a very simple thing. It just extends the money we appropriated in 2017 to the Boysport Tribal Employment Rights Office. It extends that appropriation just until the end of this fiscal year. And that's House File 137. But because we're amending a 2017 appropriation, we have to take that entire section into the bill again. So that's about 10 pages. There's only one little thing in there that actually changes. On page 95, line 28, this is the beginning of section 15. This requires DEED to prepare a report on the barriers to employment for people with mental illnesses. This is House File 1253. Page 96, starting on line 5, you get section 16, which is the Special Education Employment Pilot Program, House File 2449. Flipping to the next page, page 97, starting on line 20, section 17. This is the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative, which is in the governor's budget. This is House File 2449 also. Turning to page 103, line 19, this is section 18. These are the Child Care Economic Development Grants, which is also governor's language that is also reflected in House File 2474. And if you turn again to page 105, starting on line 23, section 19, these are the Community Prosperity Grants, which again, governor's language reflected in House File 2506.
Mr. Chair and members, Ben Weeks from House Research, and I'm just going to continue where Ms. Shalene left off. Beginning on page 107, that's Article 5. The entirety of Article 5 is Chair Mahoney's House File 6, the same as the second division engrossment with a couple technical changes. And that continues through page 127, which is the beginning of
Article 6, which is all of the substantive provisions of House File 11, which is the same as the second division engrossment of that bill. And in Article 7, beginning on page 136, is also from House File 11, and that is the enforcement provisions of that bill, also from the second division engrossment. And then, members, on page 139 begins Article 8, which is labor and industry policy. Section 1 on page 139 deals with retainage for building contracts from Chair Mahoney's House File 878. On page 140, Sections 2 and then Section 3 are Representative Dabney's House File 1504, changes to the Youth Skills Training Program. And then moving on to page 142, Sections 4 and 5 are the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council recommendations, which was Representative Sundin's House File 2311. And on page 144, Sections 6, 7, and 8, those are the changes to the Packing House Worker Bill of Rights. That was Representative Hansen's House File 1860. And then on page 145, Sections 9, 10, 11, and 12 are a portion of the Department of Labor and Industry's housekeeping bill, Representative Mahoney's House File 2313. And that continues on to page 148, where the Section 13 is a provision dealing with the accessibility of public buildings from House File 772. And then on the next page, 149, Sections 14 and 15 are a continuation of the Department of Labor and Industry's housekeeping bill from 2313. And then on the next page after that, 150, Section 16 is now Chair Knorr's House File 282, dealing with manufactured and modular homes. And that continues through Section 23 and brings us to page 155 in the bill, I believe. Section 24 there is the second half of Representative Mahoney's retainage for building contracts bill, House File 878. And then we jump back in on page 157 to more about manufactured modular homes from House File 282. And Section 26 on page 157 is the remainder of the Department of Labor and Industry housekeeping changes from House File 2113. The next article, Article 9, which begins on page 157, deals with policy in the Commerce Department. The first section there deals with prohibitions on Internet service providers, and that's from House File 136, Representative Stevenson's bill. 2 pages later on page 159 is from Representative Mahoney's House File 914, deals with funding for financial institutions account. And then beginning on page 160 and continuing for the next 5 pages, Sections 3 through 8, deal with interest rates on short-term loans from Representative Dabney's House File 1501. And that continues for 5 pages to page 165, which is House File 1424, Representative Stevenson's Student Loan Advocate Program, and that's Sections 9 through 17. And then finally, on page 174 of the Commerce article, Section 18 is the remainder of Representative Stevenson's House File 136, dealing with Internet service providers. Beginning on page 176, there are Articles 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14. Those are identical with the first engrossment of Representative Zhang's House File 374, which are the Unemployment Advisory Council's 2018 recommendations.
And then Article 15, which just has one section in it, Section 1, begins on page 197, and that was eligibility for unemployment insurance for school bus contractors, which was Representative Bernardi's House File 988. Article 16, all of the sections in that article, which begins on page 198 of the bill, are changes to the Public Employment Relations Board, mostly dealing with data and meetings, and that's from Representative Carlson's House File 769. And the remainder of the bill, Articles 17 through 26, are the Revised Unclaimed Property Act, which was a governor's recommendation, which we discussed earlier, which deals with the changes in how unclaimed property will be treated. And those were carried in Chair Mahoney's House File 2538. And that continues through the end of the bill.
Thank you to the House Research. Any questions from the members? Representative Cousin.
Mr. Chair and staff, on page 157, House, I think you'd mentioned House File 136. Is that correct, Mr. Weeks? It's the Internet service adherence to net neutrality.
Mr. Weeks?
Mr. Chair, members, that's right. 157, starting at line 20, I believe.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I don't remember specifically going over that bill. Is that a bill that we heard, or was it was I gone during a snowstorm?
Chair Mahoney.
I can't remember. We heard so many, I can't remember either. So I will ask staff if we did hear that particular bill.
Chair and members, that was not heard in the Jobs Committee, as it is purely policy. It was last heard in the Commerce Committee on February 13th, so it had a hearing in the policy committees.
Mr. Chair. I would just add that in addition to the Commerce Committee, it was heard in government operations and state government finance.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to just have staff walk through that for this committee as well?
Only if they can do it in 5 or 10 minutes. Because then I don't have to ask. I don't have to answer any questions.
Yeah.
I think you might be better off to asking Representative Stevenson to walk through it, as it's his bill.
Representative Stevenson.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Koznick. House File 136 is a consumer protection bill related to activities of Internet service providers. It specifically has two provisions. The first, I think, is in Section 18 of the article that incorporates this, relates to prohibiting Internet service providers from engaging in blocking, throttling, or otherwise restricting Internet traffic on the base of the source of the traffic, so they can't prefer one content provider over another. The second provision, which I believe is in Section 1, is a contracting provision that applies to the state and its political subdivisions, requiring that they not purchase Internet from Internet service providers that don't adhere to net neutrality principles. That provision does contain an exclusion for areas that are only served by one Internet service provider. There's also an amendment that will be added on Thursday that will exempt the broadband grant program from that section.
Representative Cosmic.
I assume that wasn't controversial in either of the other committees that it was heard in then.
Representative Stevenson.
Kind of depends on your version, your opinion of.
I personally don't find it controversial at all.
All right. Any further questions to the House research? Representative Hale.
Mr. Chair, this might be for Chair Mahoney.
Go ahead.
Chair Mahoney, can you, just in helping me understand again how this is complicated, how these all the piece parts come together in your bill, there's maybe three or four new grant programs, opportunity funding, youth programs, child care, business development. Are those are new categories under DEED, and I'm just wondering, maybe it's in the policy language, but if you can talk about your intent with those, and will there be parameters for how these groups apply for those grants, and will we get a report back for the effectiveness? Just I know in the beginning of the committee this year, you pointed out your preference for competitive grants and accountability back to the legislature. So I guess I'm just trying to connect the dots with these new programs and how that will work.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, there are a I don't believe, and I'd ask staff, I think there's only one new competitive grant program. All the rest were existing, and I just added to them. And can you help me on that? How many of those competitive grant programs are new?
How's research?
Chair and members, so are you asking about, I think we're talking about on page, like line 31 of the spreadsheet, the business and community funding, you're talking about those sorts of, what I would call discretionary funding pools?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and to staff. Line 31, that bucket, and then line 80, the bucket that's called opportunity funding, and then line 94, the other bucket called youth programs.
Yes, these are new discretionary funding pools where a set amount of money is given to the agency, and the commissioner then has discretion to divide that money between the items that are inset, the programs. They're, almost all of those are existing programs, that many of which have received funding in the past. A couple of the groups are new. They're from bills that we heard in this committee this year. But the commissioner then has discretion to decide the amount and reasonable terms for the grant. You can see all that policy language in the bill itself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. In the policy language, then, does it include how they will be monitored and if we get a legislative report back?
Chair and members, it does not explicitly require that. It allows the commissioner to set reasonable terms like that, and DEED does quite a bit of reporting on these things typically.
And Mr. Chair, I decided discretion was the better part of valor rather than try to do the reporting requirements in the committee this year. The last time when we created the dashboard at DEED, it took up almost the whole second part of the second half of session. And we had a budget to do this year. I intend to spend a tremendous amount of time coming up with how are we going to report and how are we going to get those reports and what will actually get you a hearing in this particular committee. I've talked to a number of committee members. They are very interested in doing it. Some have brought up ideas already. We'll hold some hearings through the interim. My idea is essentially I want to know what's your goals, how you're going to accomplish them, how you're going to report them. If we can't come up with a before I give a bill a hearing in the committee, I think it's time we start to hold people's feet to the fire and not just have to take their word at this testifier. I know many of these. I've visited these. They're great programs. They do wonderful work. And they should have the ability to tell us how that work got accomplished and what they did accomplish at the end. So I put it all in the poor commissioner's lap to continue as they have done. I think they could have pushed for more accountability, but there's a whole number of programs that resist that particular requirement. As to the grant programs, I did that for two reasons. One is I want to bring as many of these grants into conference as I possibly can. The other is that I figured that it gave me a good excuse to put big chunks of money into it and kind of confuse the fiscal staff if possible. These particular grant programs, now there's new ones in there, allowed in there, in the language. But we put almost $75 million into opportunity grants to help people get out of poverty. You could probably, about 10 of that, 10 million of that is for businesses to expand and start up. There's the collaboration. There is a bill in there that helps entrepreneurs with a stipend for health insurance, which is one of the biggest complaints or reasons that we have heard people are reluctant to start up their new business. There is the Enterprise Minnesota, who has always been funded out of this committee, and the Neighborhood Development Corporation. Enterprise has been split between small businesses and small manufacturers and large ones, and the Neighborhood Development Corporation primarily works with groups under 25, employers under 25 to 50, and startups, a lot of startups. And I look at starting up a business as a way to get out of poverty and to have to buy a whole lot more aspirins. I tried that 25 years ago, and I realized that it was not my best foot forward. So that's the reason we went to all these competitive grants, is to get more money into them, give more people an opportunity to present their ideas to the business community or the state's business community, which is DEED, and see if they can get some assistance.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for the explanation.
Representative Ekman.
I'm good.
You good? Representative Cosby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if we could get the research notes from my researchers just to kind of on the policy walkthrough to kind of connect the House files with the language that's in the bill, if that's appropriate.
Yes, there's a preliminary version of the index in your packets, I believe. Like this. The second page of that goes through all the policy, and there will be an updated version of this sent out, I think, later today. We can send this out and post this because we've made some improvements that have the page and line numbers and so on, so it's easier to find where everything is in the bill and what House file it matches up with and when it was last heard, either in this committee or in one of our two policy committees, subcommittee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and staff. That's helpful. I didn't recognize that. Do you know offhand how many provisions weren't heard in this committee?
Ms. Sutton.
Chair and members, do you want included the ones that were heard in Commerce and Labor? I believe the only things that were not heard were items of the governor's budget, which we had presentations about, okay, if not the specific language in front of us.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then, obviously, on the House File 136, I jokingly recognize how controversial that actually is. My understanding is in the fiscal note that there were two FTEs for Commerce to investigate and enforce. Is that included in this bill? I'm being told that it's not.
Ms. Sherlin or Representative Stevens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, I don't see any appropriation to Commerce for those FTEs.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then Chair Mahoney, I don't know if maybe it's going to be in the Commerce bill instead, or if that'd be, I don't know why it'd be split up, but probably something to we'll be taking a closer look at, I guess. Pass a new policy with no enforcement. It's interesting.
Mr. Chair, I've been very generous to Commerce this year. They have two more days to convince me that they need $400,000 for two more FTEs.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
I would say that we have the Department of Employment and Economic Development's commissioner here, and he would like to speak to the bill. So if we could finish up our questions relatively soon to give him time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't know if the staff or who can answer this, but with all of the changes to the bill, is there an estimate of the number of full-time employees that we're adding to government from these changes here and additions?
Mr. Chair.
Sam Mahoney.
No, but that's forthcoming. I just have not sat down and put it to paper.
Okay, would appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Chair, I would. Yeah, would appreciate that. Thank you.
Could we call up my testifier, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Because I think he's got at least 15 minutes of praise for this bill.
That'll be great.
You sure not 14?
Well, he could go 14. I'd be happy.
Commissioner, welcome back, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, thanks everyone for having me here this morning. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and I'm excited to be here this morning. What an exciting day and a full house for this exciting conversation. Crafting a budget is no small task, and so I want to extend our gratitude from the Governor's Office for all the hard work that's been done to put together this very thoughtful plan. As you all know, the Governor's budget has three main pillars, healthcare, education, and community prosperity. Many of the items in this budget hit upon some of those key priorities in the community prosperity pillar of his budget, and so we're very excited for that. And I hope that as we continue this session, we can dive into these issues more directly and discuss them as we hammer out a great budget for the people of Minnesota. I want to start by thanking you for including VRS in the base budget recommendation here. I think, as this committee well knows, Minnesotans with disabilities face some of the steepest challenges to employment in our state. In fact, Minnesotans with disabilities are 43% less likely to find jobs than their non-disabled counterparts are, and so your commitment to including VRS in this budget is critical in helping disabled Minnesotans find and keep jobs in competitive environments and integrated environments here in the state. So thank you for that. Also wanted to highlight and thank you all for focusing on Minnesota's innovation economy. As we've talked about here on several occasions, we think, indeed, this is a really important moment for our state's ecosystem, for entrepreneurship and for startups, and that new ideas are going to be required to achieve new results in this space. And so your support of the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative, which is, of course, also in the governor's budget to incentivize startups to help them grow and to build a whole arm of outreach around this for DEED, is something that we're very excited about and are thrilled to work with you on as we move forward. Also, really thrilled with your commitment to closing the opportunity gap in this omnibus bill. As Representative Mahoney just outlined, $75 million is a significant investment in this community. When we look at our two budgets, there's some differences in how we have defined these budget items. We look forward to discussing that further, all towards the goal of continuing a conversation on how to close our opportunity gaps in this state. Obviously the gaps between whites and people of color in Minnesota is an embarrassment and something that we need to change, not just because of the moral reasons of closing that gap, but the economic reasons as well, because that's where our labor force is, that's where it's growing, and if we're going to close our talent gap, that's where we need to start. So thrilled that you have a big focus on that in your budget as well. Also, are grateful for the funding and the policy language that is necessary to support the creation of paid family medical leave. This is an issue that we are passionate about indeed and think has huge benefits for making our talent market here more attractive and making working in Minnesota a more attractive thing for workers in the state. And so establishing that placeholder for paid family medical leave is something we think is very, very important. I also was really excited to see that you included child care in your budget. This is an issue I hear about almost every day when I talk to businesses across the state, not just here in the Twin Cities, but particularly in greater Minnesota. We have seen massive declines in the amount of child care slots available. And, of course, if you can't put your most precious your children, your most precious thing in your life in the care of people you trust while you're at work, then how can you actually go to work and have a job? This is really becoming a crisis in Minnesota. So we are very grateful you've included that in your budget. And I think from a deed perspective, it's about helping new child care businesses grow where there simply aren't child care businesses in certain towns across the state. The final thing I did want to raise a concern about in the bill was the cuts that were made to MIF and JCF. This is one area that I think we were concerned to see the decreases in. These two programs are really important economic development engines for DEED. They're pretty modest compared to other states. When you look at how much Minnesota spends regularly on economic development strictly, we're in the bottom third of states to spend in this area. These are grants that go directly to companies who are creating jobs and matching our investment from the state to create new opportunities for workers. And in the governor's budget, we had that at $25 million for MIF and $16 million for JCF. This budget is significantly less. It's at 9 and 11, so half or less than half for both of those programs. And I think you all know as well, because a lot of these businesses are in your districts. Representative Gunther, for example, Zierke Built Manufacturing was awarded $360K for MIF in your district, which leveraged another $2.5 million in private investment and created 15 jobs, about $20 an hour. Representative Noor, I'm sure you know about Link Snacks, also a recipient of MIF at $850K, which leveraged $13 million in local funding to create 85 jobs, about $52 an hour. Representative Kosnick, just another example, in Lakeville, of course, QA1 Precision Products was awarded $350,000 in JCF, which leveraged $7.5 million in local investments and about 19 jobs at $19 an hour. So these are the kinds of programs. Just a few examples. Everyone here has some companies in their districts who have done great work with some of the state funding. We think that decrease is a significant one that you're suggesting, and one that we are a little concerned about as it relates to our ability to do some of the core economic development work that DEED is focused on. So that is the one concern I would raise. Overall, I think this is a thoughtful budget. You've got a lot of great things in here. We're really excited to work on it with you in the coming weeks as things start to get a lot more interesting and exciting with numbers on the table and a lot to discuss. But you know, I know that we all share the goal of making this a greater state for workers, a greater state for business that leverages our extraordinary talent here to grow our GDP and make Minnesota a great place for business. So thank you for the omnibus bill and for having me here today.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony.
You're about 5 minutes short, though.
Oh, okay. We can talk more about startups, entrepreneurship, anything you want to discuss.
No.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Any questions for the Commissioner?
Quick question. Mr. Chair and Mr. Commissioner, just a quick looking at the budget here, the competitive grants have been increased a lot. So I'm just curious, does DEED have the capacity to run all these competitive grants for either the startup business support or the nonprofit competitive grant?
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the MIC funding, for the startup funding, there is some FTE costs in our $5 million estimate. I think it's one or two FTEs to help start up that new office focused on startups and entrepreneurship. For the competitive grants, for opportunity grants, essentially, this is what we do. So we have not included a funding request for FTEs in that budget. We're excited to dive in and work with the organizations that we all know do great work here. And however we end up structuring that budget item, it's a priority, I think, both of legislature and DEED. So this is a huge priority for us, and we're going to work hard to get it right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the Commissioner, welcome, and my new day, my first day here today, so I have a question.
Oh, welcome.
That goes back to a little bit of a broadband question. I know working with your predecessor, Shantara, Ms. Hardy, regarding the Office of Broadband, is that still land underneath your purview, or is that sort of still shared between you and Commerce? Could you just give me an update as if anything there has changed with the administrations?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we have an Office of Broadband Grants at DEED that is one of the tops in the nation. It's a program on which many other states have modeled their efforts. Commerce does some of the regulatory work around broadband, but at DEED we are operating a program that gives out those grants to telecoms who need additional funding to have the incentive to put broadband in these areas where it's a lot harder to get it to. So we do have a broadband grant office there. That's not a part of this budget, as I understand. Of course, that focuses on sort of greater Minnesota and some of the rural economic development parts of the legislature. But we're excited about it. As you know, the governor has asked for $70 million to put us on a path to meet those statutory goals. And it's a big idea and one that I think isn't really partisan. It's about getting access to people to information and economic opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Grubbs. Any other questions for the commissioner? See none. Final statements from the Chair Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have crafted this budget. I've talked to quite a few of the members. I'm sure I've missed one or two, particularly the new guy on the block. But I have tried to focus this on a number of areas. As was spoken to earlier, we have probably one of the worst rates of unemployment for the disabled. And this bill puts a lot of money into finding, helping them get employment and finding out what's holding that employment up. We have a significant number of men and women coming out of our criminal justice system. I have put an extreme amount of money into that. It is really for two reasons. None of us grew up pristine. None of us did not make a mistake as a young man or young woman. Many of us had the fortune of either never getting caught or having really good lawyers. These people did not. They got caught, they went into jail, and they are marred for life. We need to repair those men and women, not only for the fact that it's the human thing to do, but our workforce needs them. When you go to apply for a job with a felony, that application 99 times out of 100 goes into the circular file right away. And that just adds to our problems and heightens recidivism. So I've spent a lot of time, energy, and money in this bill working on that particular issue. Our small towns are struggling in greater Minnesota. We have significant policy and dollars for our small towns in greater Minnesota. We have significant money in here in the grant program and earmarked monies for small business and mid-sized business development and expansion. There's no reason to have a small business that never grows. The reason to have a small business is to grow from whether you start with 5 or you start with 25, is to grow to that next step, that next level, and get some of the assistance. I have talked to a good number of small businesses that said their critical moment was that 6 months to 18 months. And hopefully these organizations can help get those small businesses to grow and to survive past 18 to 24 months. As I've talked to earlier, we're going to try to do as much as we possibly can in this committee to close the opportunity gap. There's nothing more important to a man or a woman to be able to come home with a paycheck that covers the rent, the food, and a bit for savings, maybe a car, whatever it is that you try to save for. It not only helps us as a state, it helps that person. When you can come home and pay your bills and put a roof over your head, that gives you confidence. That gives you honor. And that's an important piece to humankind, is to have honor in what we do. And I'm trying to get our workforce training programs to take more risks. And one of the complaints I've heard is what I did with Summit Academy. I put $3 million in this bill for them because they stepped out. They took a risk and invested in a technology format. They partnered with companies to hire the men and women that come out of their particular organization. There are no other programs that train young men and young women, all comers, for the kind of dollars that they spend and the opportunities they provide to get a job that takes someone out of poverty, takes them from a $20,000 or $25,000 or $30,000 a year job to a $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 a year job. That's why I got into this particular business. I can defend my bill and my attitude and my principles behind this all day long. I think our job is to help people get a good job that takes them out of poverty and lets them have the honor of being a member of society that pays their own bills without any help or assistance from anyone else. Members, I hope that this bill meets those goals. I'm sure no bill is perfect. Thursday will tell. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call and pass this bill to Ways and Means. I'll renew my motion to pass House File. What number is this again? 2208.
One second, Mr. Chair.
Correct me when I'm wrong.
We'll do. I think we adopted the amendment earlier on, and we do have another meeting tomorrow to go over the testifies from the public.
Yes, we do.
All right.
So you want me to wait? All right, I'll wait. I am a little anxious in my old age.
Right. So the chair renews his motion.
So what's the motion, Mr. Chair? How about a jury?
Mr. Chair. Right, Mr. Chair, we'll take up this bill tomorrow because this is our moral document. So budget is our moral document. You just stated a few minutes ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members.
So our next meeting is Wednesday at 8 a.m. in room 10.
Room 10?
And yes. And if you wanted to testify, this is for the public. This is your opportunity to bring your statements. You can contact Michael Molnar and be able to be included in the testimony. Please, we'll see you at 8 a.m. tomorrow at 10. No other business before the committee, so we are adjourned.